Right, yeah, there we go.
There we go.
Good morning. This is the House Committee on Higher Education, Innovation, and Workshop, or Workforce, not Workshop, Development. Let's see, we're going to have an informational hearing today on Senate Bill 418, and then also an informational hearing on the HEC Strategic Plan. And I think that Mr. Ben Cannon is going to lead us off on both of those. So do I do this?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Opening an informational hearing on Senate Bill 418.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Ben Cannon, Executive Director of the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. Very pleased to be here today to present recommendations from the HEC on the potential deployment of dollars that were set aside in conjunction with the passage of Senate Bill 418 last session. I'll be followed by members of the work group who really informed the HEC's recommendations for this funding and this work, and they will undoubtedly be able to answer the difficult questions that you have about the proposal, but I'm prepared to provide an overview. Just for background, Senate Bill 418 passed in 2015, and it really emerged from work that the legislature asked then the Oregon Education Investment Board and others to do to focus on this high school to college transition. And the initial focus was on potential policy around dual credit, accelerated learning, and it broadened to ask the HEC to come back to you this session with a proposal for improving the high school to college transition. And I'm really pleased that we're bringing these recommendations to you, that they reflect a truly multi-sector approach. They reflect work that was informed by school district leaders and ESD leaders, community colleges, and university folks who participated in this work group, and bring back a comprehensive set of recommendations for one-time investment of $6.8 million. That was the set-aside that Ways and Means included in its budget for you to consider potentially spending this biennium on the work. It's rare, I think, in this building. We talk a lot about this high school to college transition. This is dedicated, one time, but dedicated funding for really improving the success of students as they make the transition from high school to college. So with that, I'm going to launch into the presentation. So as directed by Senate Bill 418, we convened a work group, advised there's the number, a little over $6.8 million, and our 24-member work group met through the fall, and the HEC adopted essentially the recommendations they presented to the commission for the investment of the $6.8 million. I mentioned we sort of asked the work group to look at this as one-time funding. So whereas it's certainly tempting and necessary to invest in core capacity, the staff, the faculty, the other kind of supports that are necessary on a permanent basis to improve this transition, given the way this funding was devised, we asked the work group to really focus on one-time expenditures, one-time investments in tools, professional development that could have an enduring impact but would not have an ongoing budgetary one.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Would you take questions as we go?
Absolutely.
Mr. Cannon, why did you not include the fifth-year program? Did you talk about adding the fifth-year program to your study?
Representative Wisnett, Representative Gallegos, because of the sort of parallel work that was underway that some of the state agencies and certainly constituent groups were participating in to address the future of fifth-year programs, we set that to the side and chose not to have what otherwise might have been resulted in sort of a confusing or even contradictory set of recommendations around fifth-year specifically.
Thank you. I would encourage then, I think the HEC should sit in on those because it have someone part of the team that's looking at that fifth-year, because I think you have your opinion would be very valuable to that if it's not being looking at the whole picture of transitioning.
Representative Wisnett, Representative Gallegos, thank you. And I agree that fifth year represents an important component to this work, to this project of better bridging high school to college, and we're certainly happy to participate in those conversations. So the work group recommendations that have been forwarded to you, to the legislature, by the HEC fall into four categories. They're described in this meeting. And so activities, resources, and tools that fit number the first category of improving advising as students make the transition. The second category, improving students' use of their required education plans and profiles that our high school graduates are required to complete. The third category, improving the practice of placing students when they arrive at community college, and continuing our work to improve developmental education for those who require it when they enter community college. And the fourth category, refining the pathway for math between high school and community college. And I'm going to describe each of these in somewhat more detail over the next several slides and then wind up. So in that first category of aligned counseling, we are recommending a $1.1 million investment that would do several things. The, I think, sort of shorthand way to understand the work that would be done under this investment is the convening and the sharing of information and practices between high school counselors and advisors and college counselors and advisors. And I think what the work group identified is that there are information gaps that high school advisors and counselors don't know some of the things that they should know in order to optimally advise high school students about their post-secondary options. And likewise, post-secondary advisors and counselors have gaps in their knowledge around what is occurring in high schools. And as a result, the proposal here would address that through the convening of these folks through better data. This work would these convenings would include a statewide convening this summer, but primarily would take place on a regional level through our regional achievement collaboratives, where high school and college advisors would meet on a regional basis.
One moment, excuse me,
Representative Riverton.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt. It says K-12, and I think. And we're talking about counseling, but what I'm hearing is more the high school and beyond. And I just wondered if you are really considering the importance of maybe some of that earlier counseling, particularly middle school level, maybe even before that, where it would, I think there's a longer continuum of counseling that would be helpful. I just wondered if you're really looking at the whole spectrum.
Representative Rudin, Mr. Chair, I would defer to a member of the work group to answer specifically the extent to which they discussed and anticipate potential advisors, counselors from earlier grade levels participating in that. I agree with your point that this is useful to begin at middle school or even earlier, this sort of consideration of post-secondary options. Superintendent Andy Gardner, among others, could help speak to that.
All right. Thank you.
Another question?
Vice Chair Gallegos, Mr. Cannon, thank you for being here. This is an important issue. I think we have all recognized that. And I'm not sure this is the appropriate question for this particular presentation, but it's something that I think has been understood for some time. And I'm delighted that we're looking at developing some sort of training for folks who work in the advising field in high schools. Something that has come up for many, many years is at the risk of I'm trying to be very careful how I craft this. Rather than do training for our our wonderful folks who work in the high school college advising field and doing kind of retro training after they've come out. It's been a topic of conversation for quite some time that as we train our high school counseling staff in their graduate programs, that this type of education should be an integral part of how we train them in the very beginning, because there's a definite disconnect between, in my opinion, in how high school counselors are trained and doing wonderful work on the social services side of what they're expected to do. A number of high school counselors do scheduling and have other duties as assigned, but there's a real disconnect between the training that they get in their master's programs and what this expectation of how they advise students on their post-secondary education or training path come together. So I just want to draw out the fact that we're doing it after the fact, and maybe we need to take a look at doing it during the training initially in the beginning. And I'm not sure that has been addressed or is being addressed, and I just want to draw attention to it.
So Representative McEwen, Vice Chair Gallegos, I absolutely agree. Clearly this is a multifaceted issue, right? There's the issue of training at the outset that you've identified. There's the really fundamental issue of capacity at both the secondary and post-secondary level, right? Do we have enough? Well, no. Quite clearly, we don't. And then there's the issue that the work group attempts to tackle here, which is around the ongoing support and professional development for those who are working in this field. We would love to do and address all of those things at once. Our recommendation today is that the biggest bang for this very small buck of one-time funding can occur in the support for the existing professionals. But I know that there are efforts underway, including some that involve some of the same folks who were involved in putting this recommendation together at the training level as well, at the preparation level, and be happy to have that conversation too. I agree that that's fundamentally important.
Follow up,
sure.
I just want to make sure that is not lost as we move through this process of making sure that the skills are there that are needed at the high school level and that the capacity is there, which is clearly an issue that at some point we need to address as well. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you.
I have one comment as well. I think that we tend to lose sight of the fact that when we talk about school funding, we tend to think about smaller class sizes, extending the school year, I mean, those kinds of things. We don't appreciate that we're really talking about a lot of other supportive pieces to the puzzle. And I think that high school counseling degree, master's degree, I think it's a one-year program, I believe, right after. So there's a four-year bachelor's degree, and then there's a one-year counseling degree that teaching graduates can get. And so to me, the question is really what's going into that that particular training piece. And yeah, I think we would welcome a discussion of that element.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, the second category of proposed investment coming from the work group and the commission is approximately $3.9 million to support planning and practices that help ensure that every student graduates from high school with a plan. You are probably aware that our state high school graduation requirements include a plan, education plan and profile, and the dollars that we've proposed to invest here would help update those systems and tools, including a technological update that would support school districts in making the education plan and profile available to students through tablets and phones, for example, but also other activities. So we've proposed in this $3.9 million investments in expanding the state's work to help students access the FAFSA, the federal application for free application for federal student aid. That's an existing project that our Office of Student Access and Completion is leading and seeing great success in. We're proposing to expand the Oregon Career Information System and help school districts, again, that are already, some of whom are already using this tool, but expanding access to that. We're proposing an expansion of AVID in high schools to high-need high schools currently lacking that or similar programs. So it's a suite of activities designed to help students increase the likelihood that they graduate high school with a plan.
Another question?
Okay. Thank you, Chair Gallegos. Yeah. And Mr. Cannon, you know, because I'm familiar with a lot of these things, I think it gets me down in the weeds a little bit. But Career Information Systems has been around for quite some time, well over a decade, and all schools have had access to it for over 10 years. So when you say expand access, could you maybe detail that out a little bit more for me? Is it educating schools that it's there, or is it actually beefing up the Career Information System services themselves?
So I'm gonna give you a very shorthand answer, and then hope that a member of the work group can elaborate on it. But I believe in the case of the Career Information Service, part of what's required and what we think is possible with some one-time application of dollars is updating, including technological updates to that, that can sort of bring this tool into the 21st century. Maybe we shouldn't say that anymore. Now that it's 2016, we need a better metaphor. But that's I think the primary intent. With the you're absolutely right. It's a tool that's available today, but not as useful as it needs to be, and requires some updating.
Thank you,
Mr. Cannon. I think we're going to try to hold questions until we get to the other panel.
I'll stand down, Vice Chair. Thank you.
Members, the third of four categories is involves recommendations and investment in supporting the redesign and better practices when it comes to the placement of students in developmental education and support for students in developmental education at community colleges. As you are aware, the majority of students who enter community college, even directly from high school, are placed into either math or writing at levels that are not college credit bearing, and as a result, they, you know, they're climbing out of a hole just to get sort of into college level work. The state, in partnership with community colleges, has for several years been first developing recommendations for improving placement and practice of developmental education and implementing those. The proposed dollars here would provide additional impetus to that work, including through pushing on the co-requisite model of developmental education, where students are enrolled simultaneously in a credit-bearing class as well as the developmental education course. That's a challenge for colleges to pull off. It's a cultural shift and a practical shift, but one that the application of these dollars can support, and one which has proven really successful in states and colleges where it has occurred. This funding also would support our ongoing work to improve the placement practice for students in developmental education. The final category is focused on math and the math pathway specifically. In a nutshell, the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, in conjunction with our community college and university partners, has created a new math pathway. This is very exciting and actually very important work for students who do not intend to earn a STEM-related major. Historically, all students who are seeking a degree have been pushed into a conventional math pathway that has college algebra, a calculus track, as it's organized around that calculus track. In conjunction with math faculty at our colleges and universities, we have adopted for transfer degrees and promoted the development of a new math pathway that's starting to take hold at community colleges and starting to be accepted at universities. That work needs to be pushed back down into the high schools and aligned with high school math pathways so that we are, and there's a link here too to counseling and advising, but that we're appropriately supporting students in making a transition from high school math to college math, depending on their career and academic objectives. My final few slides have to do with some of the barriers that these proposals attempt to address. You see here the concern about whether the information students and their families receive is useful, the need for better data and tools, the alignment or the concern about misalignment of curriculum. You'll note that we detail in the report, although not in these slides, exactly how we propose to distribute the funding. RACs, our regional treatment collaboratives, would be the conveners for some of this work and would be funded through it. Our Office of Student Access and Completion and other HEC offices, as I mentioned, would support some of this work, and community colleges are centrally involved. There is some funding dedicated to measuring the impact around the counseling alignment piece in particular, and other proposals for how we would know the impact of this investment. Finally, I want to note the folks from a wide range of organizations, K-12, higher ed, et cetera, who participated in forming these recommendations, and we think they offer a great foundation for student persistence, retention, and lifelong success. I'll stop there.
Thank you, Mr. Cannon. I really appreciate having you speak to us anytime you have the time to do so. We are sort of in a pinch for time, so I do want to hear from the panel, so we'll call them up.
Great. Thank Representative, you. I'm always happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. See, we're having Andy Gardner, Sarah Dorn, and Jim Ustrom.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
For the people who are going to be testifying and the people watching us on TV, I apologize because of the rush in this session. The members of this committee will be leaving at a certain time, so please don't take that personally. That we're not interested in what you're doing. We're being directed by the time, and I apologize if it. Hope you didn't drive far to come here. We do. We can have the opportunity to listen to your testimony here. Thank you.
Thank you. Please, whoever wants to go first.
Representative Gallegos, members of the committee, thank you. For the record, my name is Andy Gardner. I'm the superintendent of the North Santiam School District in Staten, just out of town here. Okay. Is there a time limit? I'm really dangerous.
Well, some folks are leaving at 10 after 9.
I'm okay.
I'm 15. But some of us are going to stay. So
I'm here for the duration. Okay.
So I served on the committee, and as a K-12 superintendent, I really appreciated the opportunity to work with community colleges and universities, and I think that there's the barriers that Mr. Cannon spoke about are real, and I think that there's a lot of thought and energy being put towards how we break some of those down. So I will talk a little bit about the K-12 perspective. Representative McCown, I thought your questions were excellent in terms of counseling.
And it's McEwen, but McEwen. Again, you get a pass. Everybody gets a pass.
Thank you.
Happens all the time.
When we work on high school and middle school kids in my district and within the region, we struggle to we have counselors who have skills, but not all the tools. Mm-hmm. And so as we work to try to get these varying institutions to come together and get the gears to sink just a little bit, it is really challenging because I think Jim would say community colleges are constantly working on their programs, adapting them, changing them. We are as well. To put together a coordination of that is critically important so that our counselors are up to date. So the skills they might leave college with are discrete from the current reality of how programs match. The more we are aware of that and can bring that to kids, the more important, the more real that is. When we look at class size and some other educational inputs that have there's a quantity to them. I think it's also really important that an older learner, by the time a student is in middle school or into high school, they are all very aware that they are going to be out of school pretty quickly. And that becomes a large input into the decisions they make and the relevancy of the coursework that they do in high school. So if we continue to work on our own island without the information of where students can go, it's really difficult for us to be able to help those students figure out where they're going to go, the choices that they're going to make, or even experience things that might interest them. And so that becomes a really important concept here. I really enjoyed the committee. It was great to listen to the different institutions and levels of education and figure out. There are a lot of challenges here, but that is a really critical piece. I think also some of this funding will inevitably lead to a leadership awareness. So if you have a counselor, they come out with skills, but they go into a high school and they may have some idea or been exposed to pathways somewhere. If a leader does not assign them that work or does not create the surround, the environment with pathways present for kids, then it's going to be very difficult for them to carve out their time to build something like that on their own. So it really has to be a holistic approach as well. The RAC, the money going through the RAC is great because that allows us to work regionally with regional partners where there's always some difference, university to university, community college to community college, and certainly high school to community college. That allows us to begin to focus and build regional partnerships. So a pathway is really important. They help kids, when they're in high school, make a choice about what they might do. The presence of those and have them be informed is great. We've heard the community colleges, and it's a very valid point, kids need the right credits, not just be a credit grab, so that they don't end up with a lot of credits that they do not use and end up late in their college career running out of financial aid because they have not made the right choices. This is designed to do that, to help kids experience that. The Career Information Service does exist in many schools. But again, when it comes to the surround, are there pathways? Do kids have a counselor that's helping them to interpret that and make choices? Often it is a software piece that maybe not all the kids even see. So it becomes a great tool for us then to broaden the conversation with the student about their interest.
Thank you.
I will stand down. That's a record for me.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Sarah Dorn, and I am the School to Career Coordinator at David Douglas High School. As the school to career coordinator, I oversee our career technical programs, build relationships with business partners, oversee all of our dual credit opportunities, and work with our college and career center staff to be sure that students and their families are aware of college financial aid and scholarship assistance. I also participated in the work group, and I feel that as someone who works in our state's largest high school, I'm very thankful to be here to be able to give my perspective on how this could help. I actually agree with everything he said, so I'm going to second that and speak a little bit more just about what I see. We do need time between high schools and the community college levels. Oftentimes it does feel like we're in two separate silos. And when we sit down with our families, we always receive a lot of questions about why aren't families more involved. And the truth of it is families aren't involved because many of these families weren't successful students. They're nervous to come back to school. They didn't have a good experience. So when we sit down to talk to them about, you know, great opportunities and resources for their students, they want to be sure that there are resources and clear avenues so that their students are going to be successful. And I feel like, as you know, we should be the leaders and be able to communicate effectively that there are clear avenues for success for their students. We also need to revitalize the current tools, CIS and the Personalized Education Plan. I often speak with students and I ask what their career goals are. I hear doctor, social media expert, and the most probably prevalent answer I get right now is a computer game tester.
There you go.
I'm sure you all could understand that. My next question is always, what are you going to do to achieve those plans? And I get blank stares. CIS and the Personalized Education Plan, they do help students, but they need to be brought up to time. We need to be able to offer them in multiple languages, and they need to be offered on mobile formats, such as laptops, tablets, and their iPhones. Finally, we need to continue investing in targeted supports. I've seen hundreds of students benefit from targeted supports such as GearUp, Avid, Aspire, College Possible, and many others. These groups provide students with access to resources that are focused on overcoming challenges and barriers. They not only arm students with academic confidence and awareness about post-secondary options, but most importantly, they provide a place where students are accepted and they're mentored and they feel like they can succeed. When setbacks occur, and they do occur frequently, mentors are there to lift them up, and they have a whole community of students that are there encouraging them. These targeted supports are very essential in helping our students be successful. The students that walk down our hallways today are very different than the students that sat in my classroom 10 years ago. Our population is much more diverse, and each student brings with them a unique background and culture. However, these students do share common traits. They're creative. They're much more creative than I ever was. They're innovative, and they have a desire to make things better. Today's students are tomorrow's computer programmers, lawyers, entrepreneurs, and community leaders. But most importantly, they are our problem solvers. They're going to be sitting in your seats in 30 years. And we owe it to them to provide effective systems that will support the resources they need to be successful.
Thank you, Sarah. A brief question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Real brief. You didn't mention return on investment. We've had people sit here and talk about their debt and their debt and their debt. And is there no, do you have nothing in your presentation to say, it's going to cost you this much, this is what the job opportunity, this is what you're going to make? Is that not part of the?
I think that's a really important concept. I think the Oregon Community College Promise, we did an Avid Night at about a 70% free and reduced school 2 weeks ago, and we did not have that in, and I was sitting in the audience as the principal talked about that, and I actually stood up and said, look, here are the different pathways that allow this to become affordable. Four parents came up to me after that because they know. I could see their body language sitting there saying, hey, you're talking about my kid's ability, but you know, in the long run, college is just not affordable for my family. So there are some avenues. Now, that's part of deploying that, making people aware. And I think that changes a pathway for a high school or a middle school student.
But it's also talking about whatever that job is. Right. If your debt's $50,000, how long is it going to take you to recover in your career field with that money, too?
I'm just saying he's right.
Thank you.
Mr. Ustrom.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Jim Ustrom. I'm Vice President of Instruction and Student Services at Chemeketa Community College here in Salem. I've been there. I'm in my 30th year there. And so what I'm excited about is I feel like I've had a lot of opportunity to work on statewide committees and work with primarily around student success and student services. But I really feel there's momentum now that there hasn't been in a statewide basis. And so no matter what we do, there is momentum. We'll keep going with it. I was also on the subcommittee and worked on that, and I would like to just build really on what Andy shared and what Sarah shared and Ben. From the perspective of, I was going to focus a lot on this need for the communication and the collaboration between high school and college advisors and high school counselors. It's key to what we need to be doing, and so they both spoke to it, but I'll just say a couple more things about that. Like many community colleges in Oregon, Chemeketa continues to be a strong advocate for providing college credit in the high schools. We have a very strong college credit now program. We worked with the Willamette Promise. We're looking at different ways of accelerated learning. We're doing that. We're working with that. The problem is, for me, is that we, much like Andy said, I have an opportunity to work with individual students still, which I'm really pleased about. Just last year, worked with a young man, 4.0 student from a small school. He had more than 30 credits of college credit coming into high school. He wants to be an engineer major. Only 22 of those credits are going to be viable for his degree. He's already in his second year hitting the maximum number of credits he's eligible for federal financial aid. He's only going to make it through school with financial aid. So one good thing is he was an Oregon scholar, not an Oregon scholar, Chemeketa scholar, and at Chemeketa we have a program where if you have a 3.5 grade point average coming out of high school, you get up to 2 years of free tuition. So he does benefit from that. But his family's really struggling, and I feel really hurt for him, and that's maybe the wrong word, but that he took everything that he could when he was in high school. But there wasn't strong advising in his situation to lead him on the right path. He's known all along what he wanted to do. This is the type of student we could make an impact on if we had more connection between the high school and college counselors and advisors. I think the other piece on that I would say quickly is that through the Willamette Promise and other institutions of or activities that have occurred recently, there have been professional learning communities that have come together. And the concept out of one of the proposals here around the alignment is to, with this one-time money, create those so that they exist beyond, and that then the collaboration can continue way past the first year of this. And so that's a key piece. At Chemeketa, for the last 4 years, we've had about 1,100 students coming directly from high school to college in their fall. This year, we have over 2,000 applications through the Oregon Promise. So that in our district, I don't know if that's truly going to happen or not. But you know, if you look at the makeup of the students that come there, over 50% of those students coming directly from high school place in developmental ed or pre-college level courses. So much work has gone on this year to change the look and the feel and the implementation of developmental ed. We need to build on that, and that's another piece of this, is the overall work on developmental ed and how we handle that. You know, a student may come, even our Chemeketa Scholars, you have a 3.5 grade point average that you have to have. We also originally said you had to have place at college level, which means 100 level higher in reading, writing, and math. We had to, after much work, reduced the math down to a math 95 because it was cutting out so many of the scholars. Okay. So even people with 3.5 coming directly from the high schools aren't placing in college-level math. It's real time for work what we're going to do as they come in, and some students struggle with, they have to take math 20, 40, 60, 70, 95, and 105 to get. And if you think of the length of time to do that, this is the work that the math focus is working on, as well as developmental ed redesign, and looking at how we offer that differently. Ben mentioned the co-curricular type of activities, or the classes that are taught together with both or with math infused in the classes. We're looking at so many models, and the work has just begun. We really feel like this money and the one-time investment could help continue that effort and really build upon what's happened this year. And I think, as I stated from the beginning, we've done so much work along the way. We'll continue to work. This would give us a boost and help us get rid of some of those inhibitors that our students face in being successful. I don't think I should add anything more. That's good. Thanks.
Well, I really want to thank the panel. I'm sure we have lots of questions, but again, because of time, and I'm sure we don't mean this as any disrespect for the work of the committee or the study group, and I'm sure we'll have questions that we can follow up with. Thank you very much. We have one more.
Thank you very much.
To come up.
Great. You're not taking any questions right now.
Let's hear from the last presenter, and then we can see if we can get anybody back up.
Good morning, co-chairs Gallegos and Wisnet, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Hilda Rosselli. I serve as a person who focuses on college career readiness and transitions for students grades 11 through 14 in the Chief Education Office. And I'm here to provide an additional P20 perspective for you, because this work is totally focused on that nexus of the time where students are transitioning. The critical alignment and the coordination that we need in Oregon right now to support those transitions across grades 11 through 14 is also going to be very paramount to the governor's vision to really boost our high school graduation rates so that every student graduates and graduates with a plan for their future. And that's what this work is really focused on. In the 2015 legislative session, I don't need to remind you that you did an enormous historical investment in a lot of areas that are starting to see promise around things like fostering seamless pathways for students as they move forward. However, as Ben Cannon noted in his last slide, the efforts have to work in close coordination. And that means that bringing the two groups together around high school and post-secondary is critical to helping make sure sure that students get the right information and that they're on track to be successful. What the work group also learned is that counselors in K-12 and advisors in post-secondary can examine their local data together to actually figure out what's happening to students in their region, and then assess where the current gaps of services are, and then plan supports that are more seamless for their students. What we're banking on is that type of synergy that comes from the collective wisdom of the professionals in both K-12, post-secondary, and even within the community. And the planning that I have heard to date around trying to put a summer summit together is certainly open to including middle school counselors should the funding be available. Because it's during the summer, we know that there's travel and reimbursement costs that would have to come into play. In our office, in the Chief Education Office, we have a capacity and a focus around coordinating and putting together capacity building for cross-regional, cross-sector regional partnerships. And so you've heard that one of the recommendations is to look at the regional achievement collaboratives, because they already have a statewide presence and they are a group of partners that represent the educators and the community, industry, workforce development working together. They are working on locally driven holistic strategies that help support our students in meeting where they're going with their critical outcomes. What we believe is that, what we know is that most of the RACs have action plans already that are tackling some of the aspects of this high school transition. But we believe that this will help support that work in areas where they can even further that development. I'd like to give you one example. In Southern Oregon, in their Success RAC, which spans Josephine, Jackson, and Klamath counties, they brought together community members from multiple sectors to make sure that high school youth are connected with the appropriate supports and services that will help them graduate and then transition to a career and or a post-secondary education. So the teams conducted interviews in the high schools in three counties, identified priority issues, and then they're helping share those results with the community and finding ways to support the teams in the schools to make those services happen. Lastly, with support from this fund, cross-sector groups can work together on strengthening the pivotal intersection of practice where high school counselors and advisors and staff in our community colleges and universities work together to provide more timely and effective services and supports for students. Thank you.
Now you may ask a question.
Thank you. I think we're losing our momentum here. I also need to dash off if we're about done, but I think you may have answered a question that I was pondering, which is a lot of the conversation has to do, which it should, the heck was here, talking about getting kids into college. My personal bias is that there's, we know there's a lot of people that aren't going to college, and I just wonder, where's the conversation taking place? No criticism of what we're talking about this morning, but just really want to know, where's the conversation taking place for that other 60 to 70% of the school population that are going for careers? So is that at the RACs or?
Chair Gallegos and Representative Reardon, that's an excellent question, and it comes through in multiple ways. And it banks back to somebody's earlier question about where do we, Representative Wisnes' question about how do we help students know about the options for jobs, and then also if they do have to pursue college, how to pay that back on the salary that they would be earning. That is one of the benefits of focusing on career education
right
early in the pipeline, so that students have options that may include a certificate, an apprenticeship, or a degree, a two-year degree or a four-year degree. Those are the ways in which we lay that out. And I would agree wholeheartedly with Representative McEwen's comments that 10 years ago, we didn't prepare counselors to take on the breadth of these options now. And that also is a way to provide professional development. And I don't see why we couldn't invite faculty who prepare guidance counselors to the kinds of activities to help make sure that we embed that in the preparation programs.
Can you follow up?
Well, just comment. So Gene Akins at Oregon
yes
State has worked with him a little bit on this issue. So if you're working with Gene.
Yep, he's right there with us.
Okay, good.
Yep.
Well, I do want to thank you, and I want to thank the work of the committee. I would say that a lot of this, for me, really reflects the disinvestment in education that we've seen in this state for 30 years. And now I think it's very heartening that we're beginning to look at this and start some initiatives to really address these. And this is such a critical juncture. The other question I have is, and I'll be looking for this in terms of the full report. Again, going back to my comment about recognizing that our education effort really is much broader than just teachers or faculty, but really includes advisors and so on. And Representative McEwen, I think, brought this up, that our counselors, our education counselors, cannot do social services as well. I mean, it's just too much. And so one of the things that my office is thinking about is how can we return social workers to the school systems in the state and therefore relieve then teachers so that teachers can teach counselors so that they can provide the kind of academic counseling needed. But again, that's a discussion for maybe the next session. And I'm very happy for this report. Well, I'm sure we're all going to read it very thoroughly and come up with more questions that we can take offline. Yes, you want to respond.
Chair Gallegos, I just couldn't help but add the fact that one of the things that you might find interesting is in the appendix of this report, there's actually a job description. And we included that because we think it's significant. The Oregon Department of Education has not had a lead specialist for guidance and counseling for many years. And now that person has been hired. They will start February 29th. And if you look at the job description, it's all about refocusing our state on our comprehensive guidance and counseling framework and helping leaders in our schools understand how to use a well-trained professional in the skills that are going to most impact students. So, lunch duty is great, but there's a lot of other more specific roles that counselors can now play, including working with social workers as well.
Good. Well, thank you very much, and thank the panel. We had scheduled an additional hearing, but at this point I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 418. And I really know that Director Cannon has traveled a long way, but we're going to ask him to come back maybe and do the other one at another time. Okay.
Yay.
We can adjourn. Thank you very much.
8 o'clock on
Yay.
We can adjourn. Thank you very much.
8 o'clock.